countrywide search for the missing policeman had gone on for over a week. Badger, the man from the RSPCA, had watched it all at home on telly. A strange coincidence, then, that alarmed citizens had brought him to the very spot from which the absent policeman had last patrolled his beat. Missing coppers? Missing dogs, cats, guinea pigs and rabbits? What could they have in common? Something odd was going on, and Badger was determined to get to the bottom of it. Pausing for a moment, Badger consulted his notes. Old Gupta, now relieved, slack-bladdered, returned from nature's call.
"It's good for the rhubarb,"
he observed. Standing amongst the vegetables as he rearranged his clothing, the gardener observed, near the wall, an alarming sight. The sun, streaming through the gap in the washing line, once occupied by Myrtle's voluminous unmentionables, illuminated the equestrian display, now rampant amongst the marigolds. The stuffed stallion's unnaturally huge genitalia cast a giant shadow across the flower bed, and the outraged gardener snorted in disapproval. Looking around to see that no one was watching him, Old Gupta spat on his hands and grabbed the shovel. Swinging the implement in a great arc, he dealt the gonad a terrible blow. Whack! The offensive organ, now neatly amputated, continued skywards and over the wall. Satisfied with his work, Gupta returned to his digging. On the other side of the wall, the sole representative of the RSPCA's crack commando unit ducked as the disgusting missile plunged earthwards.
"I've never seen the like of it,"
shrieked Badger in alarm, as it bounced twice on the pavement and rolled, quivering to a halt, scant inches from his foot. Badger had no idea what providence had brought the disgusting object so close to him, but he knew that somewhere there was cruelty to animals involved, and his blood was up.
"Jove, that's no way to castrate a stallion. Who did that?"
Gupta, digging furiously in the vegetable plot next door, was totally unaware of the crowd gathering scant yards away on the other side of the wall. The dull thud of metal striking metal stopped him momentarily. Buried treasure? Gupta knelt down and prodded the obstruction to his progress. A rusty metal cylinder lay at the bottom of the hole.
"Where?"
startled Gupta.
"Somebody's hidden something down here."
He lurched off to get a pickaxe and rope. Dreams of buried treasure and an end to this miserable job running through his mind. Meanwhile, on the other side of the wall, Badger was fending off a crowd of curious onlookers. His minute examination of the huge masculine member had drawn quite an audience.
"Stand back, there's nothing more to see,"
he scolded sternly, waving them away and throwing his coat over it. As the crowd slowly dispersed, grumbling and jeering, his attention returned to the wall. From the other side, the sound of muffled curses and the occasional thud drifted over to him. After a moment or two of silence, Badger, driven half mad with curiosity, decided to investigate the origins of his find. Using the bulky gland as a stepladder, he climbed up and over the wall. Boris glared through the conservatory window as Gupta returned to his work. The rhythmic crunch of the pickaxe, occasionally broken by the clang of metal striking metal.
"Useless bugger,"
he observed.
"I don't know why I hang on to him."
With the first stroke of the pickaxe, the clockwork mechanism inside the buried cylinder shuddered into life. The old German parachute mine had lain undetected since the war. Such is the reliability of German engineering that it remained every bit as dangerous today. Boris, still watching from the conservatory window, recognized the device as soon as Gupta uncovered it.
"Serve the old fool right if it goes off,"
he muttered, returning to the study. Meanwhile, crouched in the marigolds, Badger had discovered the former owner of the wayward genitalia. From his position of concealment beneath the disengendered stallion, he observed the grotesque garden ornaments with which he was now surrounded. Eyes narrowed to slits, Badger crept around to the French windows, determined to make sense of this bizarre moment in time when the entire animal kingdom had been frozen into disgusting and lewd immobility.
Perfectly monstrous.
This could only be the work of a madman. And since it obviously involved cruelty to animals, Badger felt fully vindicated as he broke into the conservatory.
Is anybody there? Come on, speak up.
He was hardly prepared for that which lay within. Lying discarded about the conservatory were Boddice's unfinished projects. The rude poodle umbrella stand, the copulating hamster desk tidy and pen holder, but of all, the most remarkable, and certainly the most repulsive, the bending marmoset pencil sharpener. The creature's expression of discomfort was indescribable, and Badger observed that by turning the tail bent to the shape of a hand crank, a clockwork mechanism hidden inside would cause the glass eyes to roll and the lips to pucker as the pencil moved irrevocably inwards. Dropping his notebook in horror, Badger gasped in shock. The door was flung open.
What the blaze are you doing?
Bellowed Boddice.
Get out, blast you!
Alerted by the sound of an intruder, the taxidermist loomed menacingly in the doorway. Unnerved by the whole experience, Badger worked his mouth silently. I. Boddice hurled a whiskey bottle at him. Badger took flight. From the top of the wall, as speech returned to him, Badger tried hard to sound authoritative.
You'll be hearing more from me, sir.
He began limply.
I will be back. Oh.
He broke off abruptly as a second whiskey bottle flew towards him and fell from the wall, landing heavily on the disembodied horse plonker.
Where's the good scotch?
Muttered Boddice. Looking up from his digging, Gupter wondered what that was all about.
I wonder what that was all about,
he said. Dragging the bomb from the hole, the old gardener, back cracking and hernia grumbling, carried it still ticking to the tool shed. Young Alfred, disturbed by the commotion in the garden, bounded down the stairs, two at a time, still wearing his cardboard beak. Crossing the lawn, he made his way to the sound of hammering. Old Gupter, convinced that the rusty metal cylinder contained a hoard of buried treasure, was attempting to open it with a cold chisel. Bent, dented, but as yet unopened, the device had ceased ticking, but with each alternate blow, it would begin again, and then stop, and so on.
I don't think there's no treasure in this here box at all. Looks more like some sort of clock. Who'd be burying a clock in the garden? I can't figure that one out. Still, look right nice all polished up, I'm sure. I'll take it in.
The ticking started all over again.
Best not let the master know he got it, though. He'll probably want it back.
Badger, the man from the RSPCA, limped painfully towards the police station, a formal complaint now large on his mind. Thrusting the door open, he slammed the bulky package on the desk sergeant's counter.
Just take a look at that, he hissed.
The desk sergeant warily removed the wrappings and gave Badger his coat back.
Yours, sir?
Inquired the policeman, wincing slightly.
Hardly,
retorted Badger, shocked by the very notion.
It'll be lost property then, sir.
Badger took a sharp intake of breath.
Well, in a manner of speaking, yes, I suppose it is.
Well then, sir, if it's not claimed in 6 months, you can keep it. Now then, what should we call it in the lost property book?
Badger told him that it was an equine intromittent organ.
A what, sir?
A horse's dick, sergeant.
Then how has it come into your possession, sir?
Badger patiently explained, as one by one, the entire constabulary filed in to examine this curious acquisition. Old Gupta paced the shed in an agony of indecision. The bomb, now polished and ticking merrily, looked quite handsome. Gupta knew little about bombs. He also knew little about clocks. He knew that they both looked nice standing on the mantelpiece. The problem was that Gupta could not be sure that the heat from the fire would not spoil it. The ticking, which stopped and started for no apparent reason, also bothered him, and unable to find a keyhole to wind it up, he had sought the advice of his master. Boris patiently explained that the primary function of the device was to explode. Gupta, in his simple way, understood little of this. Machinery of any kind was a mystery to him, but heeding his employer's counsel, he returned to the shed and wrapped it lovingly in an old coat. With a deep sigh, he hefted it onto his shoulder and trudged off to the police station. It seemed a shame, really, after all that hard work digging it up. The desk sergeant looked up suspiciously as Gupta entered, carrying the shrouded bundle.
"Lost property, sir,"
he ventured.
"In a manner of speaking."
The desk sergeant experienced a moment of mild déjà vu as he tugged gingerly at the parcel.
Wouldn't be a horse's dick in there by any chance, would there, sir?"
Gupta, baffled by the improbable nature of that suggestion, just blinked.
"I'm sorry, sir. I was just playing a hunch. It's the kind of policeman's intuition thing, you know."
The old gardener congratulated the sergeant on his almost supernatural powers of deduction, but felt sadly obliged to inform him that the parcel contained no such object, although it was a really good guess anyway. Just at that moment, Badger and two detectives, grim-faced, rounded the corner.
"Hold that man!"
yelled Badger.
"Bugger off!"
said Gupta.
"That man is a material witness!"
said Badger triumphantly to the startled detectives. At that moment, the parcel stopped ticking and gave a rusty click. Back at the big house, Boris was aware of a muffled thud as the glasses jingled in the china cabinet.
"Looks like I've been needing another gardener."
Young Alfred carefully extracted the elastic from Myrtle's gargantuan lingerie and strung it expertly twixt pulley, cantilever and hinge. The graceful device he had just fashioned had the functional beauty of a well-made machine. Birds clustered about his window, chirping, twittering, and watching his comings and goings with tiny, inquisitive eyes.
"Won't be long now,"
squawked Alfred happily, as he dreamed of wind blowing all about him, bearing him aloft as he soared magnificently, wings dipping over billowing clouds. The vision ceased abruptly as an over-tensioned pulley snapped and 5 yards of flying rubber slapped him sharply in the side of the head. Chubby Roland was looking for his cat. The marmalade monster rarely failed to arrive for tea, punctuality being its only virtue. As a rule, the smell of ripe cod boiling on the gas ring would have drawn the creature from any distance, dribbling, purring, and rubbing its stripy body in an orgasm of faked affection against Roland's leg. But today, not a trace of the animal could be found. Roland stepped back from the curb as two fire engines raced by, horns blaring. His first thought, when Marmalade went missing, was to report the matter to the police station. There had been a bout of animal thefts in the area of late, and Roland suspected the work of vivisectionists. Oddly enough, there was no reply from the police station phone, not even a ringing tone.
"Funny that,"
thought Roland.
"Completely dead."
He little knew how right he was.
"Whole country's gone to the dogs,"
he muttered. Roland was completely unaware that his errand Moggy was about to be incorporated into an erotic diorama in Boris's attic, lured there by the irresistible odour of barbecued chicken. From inside the wicker hamper, the cat glowered malevolently. Boris soaked a cotton swab with ether and advanced on the creature with a
Yeah, kitty.
Lifting the lid and flinging the swab inside, Boris neatly avoided the razor-sharp claws. Chuckling nastily to himself, he lurched off and left the chemical to do its evil work. The small cardboard notice caught Roland's eye as he approached the big house. Gardener wanted. Must work hard and keep his mouth shut. Thought Roland. Could be a nice little earner, that. His lost cat temporarily dismissed from mind, Roland pushed open the gate and strode up the gravel path. Upstairs, rotting net curtains parted slightly as Boris glowered out. Myrtle piles complaining, varicose veins forming unattractive patterns beneath even less attractive surgical stockings, stumped flat-footed to the front door. The redundant vacuum cleaner still scraped pointlessly in her wake.
Ah, you've been a good woman at the house,
ventured Roland. Myrtle, who had not been a good woman in a number of years, regarded him with undisguised contempt and loathing. Not bothering to usher him in, Myrtle shuffled off into the Stygian gloom to summon her master.
What the devil do you want?
Shouted Boris from the head of the stairs.
You'll be the master of the house,
inquired Roland, shuffling from one foot to the other.
Yes, and you'll be the idiot at the front door,
retorted Boris somewhat rudely.
About the sign,
continued Roland, unabashed. Boris strode to the door and studied the lapels of Roland's jacket with obvious distaste. From the evidence of the many enameled badges there displayed, it appeared that the wearer had been to every British Legion meeting since the organization's foundation.
Which sign?
Said Boris at length.
The one that says beware of the tiger, or the one that says trespassers will be shot on sight?
I was thinking of the gardener's job, actually,
bleated Roland at length. Boris eyed the man up and down.
You don't look the part of a gardener to me.
Come,
said Roland.
Should a gardener have a certain look? Should he wear a rustic smock and tie his trousers with string below the knee to stop the rats going up there? Oh, blimey.
Roland, now warming up to this and determined to labour the point, continued his eulogy in a like vein for some time, ending with a triumphant,
And surely you don't expect the candidate to arrive freshly smelling of horse manure and with straw in his ear, do you?
Boris considered all of this in silence. Oddly enough, it was almost exactly what he was expecting. Furthermore, since Roland had demonstrated a complete inability to keep his mouth shut, the only other criteria for the job, it would have appeared to have gone rather badly for him interview-wise. Boris prepared to slam the door in his face when Roland suddenly rushed past him.
What the blazes!
Myrtle had inadvertently let the cat out of the bag.
Marmalade!
Exclaimed Roland, swinging round suspiciously to fix Boris with an accusing stare.
Blast!
Muttered Boris in annoyance.
Yours, is it?
What have you done to him?
Bleated Roland in horror as the 4-stone cat flopped drunkenly down the stairs and landed in a heap at the feet of the Jehovah hatstand. Desperate to try and change the subject, which might at any moment turn nasty, Boris decided to give Roland the job.
Start tomorrow.
Roland scraped marmalade up from the floor, pathetic gratitude wetting his cheeks, as Boris mumbled something about a cat and a rich sherry trifle. Showing the ridiculous figure of chubby Roland to the door, Myrtle spat on the floor and muttered a curse in her native tongue.
Damn and blast!
Muttered Boris, aware now that he'd taken on a different sort of gardener to that which he was used to. Amongst the clutter of offices in Gray's Inn Road was the domain of Grip, Mangle and Reticule, solicitors and commissioners of oaths. Old Mr. Grip, long past retirement age, rotted silently in his chair. He had not moved since last August and was beginning to look quite unpleasant. Mangle, his assistant and partner, thought that the old man might well be dead, but immediately put the matter from his mind. His own position within the company would have made him the natural successor, and Mangle dreaded the thought with all of his being. He had spent the whole of his life avoiding responsibility, and the very idea of taking charge now was too unthinkable. Mangle carefully blotted the handwritten missive, beautifully calligraphed in delicate copperplate lettering, and sighed deeply. Reticule, the junior partner, coughed politely.
Couldn't we just put the old boy in the cupboard or something?
Now look here, Reticule, we've had this conversation before. People like to see old Mr. Grip. He is always there for us. He is the figurehead. He is our lifeblood. How would you like it if someone wanted to put you in a cupboard just because you were old?
Reticule was about to argue the point. Loyalty was one thing, but keeping up this futile pretense was quite another. He secretly feared that the old man's death had slightly unhinged Mangle's mind. Further discussion seemed pointless, so Reticule bit his tongue and remained silent. Young Alfred stood on the windowsill, braced against the wind. His mad quest for flight had gone too far. For weeks now, his uncle had been aware of odd happenings about the house. First, his priceless collection of dodos had molted, and then his entire bird collection. One by one, irreplaceable exhibits were being denuded of feathers. When the bald eagle suddenly lost its tail feathers, rendering both ends of its anatomy naked, Boris became apoplectic. Alfred, huddled on the roof, knew that discovery was only moments away. Tightening the harness, he took a deep breath. From his shoulders sprouted the huge wings. Months of planning, weeks of work, now about to be discovered and reclaimed. It was unthinkable. The sun glinted on the iridescent feathers, hundreds of them, each hand-glued perfectly into place. The wind ruffled them slightly, ready to bear him skyward. No time for a test flight, thought Alfred. It's now or never. Alfred flexed his pinions, the meager elastic twanged alarmingly. Suddenly, as a window below him rattled and Boris's florid face turned upwards towards him, Alfred gulped and stepped off the ledge, flapping wildly.